settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Mick and Sylvie Avery.
Hello and welcome to Spirit's Work, the metaphysical and spiritual show with a difference. And thanks for joining us. For those with us for the first time, what makes this show so unique is that every week Mick demonstrates his exceptional gift of deep trance channeling live on air. He channels an enlightened spirit called Gregory Hay, who is the spokesperson for a group of highly evolved spirits called the White Cloud Group. They're an educational group, and they are here to give us knowledge and information that we'd never have access to in any other way. And this week's show is called The Plight of Bigfoot. And this is part two of last week's show. Absolutely fascinating, absolutely brilliant. So if you'd like to participate and call us with a question or comment about Bigfoot, it's toll-free in the U.S. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free, but the number is 001-530-876-3222.
Hi, I'm Mick Avery. As well as Spirit's Work on bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 and every Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, we have another radio show which is called Spirit Teaching, and you can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, our audio CDs, maybe book an Akashic reading or one of the other diagnostic services that we have to offer, that's including animal diagnostics and diagnostics to do with houses and land and all different kinds of things like that to do with spirit interactivity, as well as people's own health problems and issues, please go visit our websites, which are www.spirit-teaching.com and also at www.spiritsworkradio.com. As Sylvie said, I am a deep trance medium, which means that I am a pure channel for the spirit world, enabling clear, concise communication from those who continue to walk with us and who try their very best to look after us. In this way, each week on our show, Sylvie has a conversation with our spirit friends so that they can give us the benefit of their wisdom, and as a result, we hopefully will get a different perspective on life, which means having more choices and options we never realized were available to us. When I go into the trance state, I will not know of anything that happens until they bring me back again. And that is how it should be, because we wouldn't want any of my thoughts and feelings from my own conscious mind getting in the way of the contact. So it's bye from me and for now. And I hope you have a good show, everyone. And I'll speak to you next time.
I'm sure we'll have a great show. And we're looking forward to speaking to Gregory's last week. It was just absolutely fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And I'll just tell you a little bit about Gregory. He was asked before his physical life if he would like to train to be the representative of this educational group. He was here in the 1700s, actually. Anyway, this group are trying to help the people of the earth discover a more harmonious way of life. The group wants us to understand the implications of what we're doing to our planet and to aid us on the road to recovery and raise the vibration of the planet. Actually, he was asked after his physical life, I think, if he would do this job, not before. Anyway, the groups consist of eminent scientists, physicists and scholars, as well as ordinary people. And between them, they have vast knowledge and insight. They try to help us to look at the bigger picture of life and to think outside of the box and explain situations that affect us and our future and the future of the planet. And, of course, that means those who wish to come after us who haven't had a physical life yet. So, like Mick said, if you want to know more about us, go to our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com. And don't forget, you can phone in during the show about our show topic tonight, which is Bigfoot, Sasquatch, however you would like to call this being. So part one last week, Gregory took us through basically the tree of life, really, to see where we all fit in, to see where Sasquatch fits in, and it was absolutely fascinating. And I think we're going to continue on from there, but basically he might want to just recap very quickly at the beginning of this show for people that didn't hear last week's show. Shame on you. Anyway, you can download it and listen to it another time. Anyway, I do believe you are with us, aren't you, Gregory?
Good love and light, my dear friend. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Hello.
Yeah, so would that be possible if you could just do a quick recap of how the Sasquatch came, you know, where he fits in and where we fit in with it?
Yes, my dear friend. Well, it's really to do with the form of being that humanity was, of course, did not actually come per se on its own through the mutation process of evolution. It is actually a gradual situation. To begin with, there were actually five different branches of the one specific species of being that at first, of course, never walked upright at all. But we're really looking at the whole situation in some respects, I suppose, akin to Darwinian theory as to how beings first evolve and transmute from one mutation to another and gradually generate their own specific species depending upon habitat, also depending, of course, upon the genetics and the generic way in which they move from one state of being to another, environmental situations, pressures upon each being generally tend over, usually actually over many species, to do with millions of years in the period of time in which they are alive. Now, with Sasquatch, of course, they are in the middle of the group of this five different species, and they, I suppose, in a sense, you could say, are the one aspect of the missing link, really, between those of the larger primates, like gorillas and orangutan, who are left, really, and who have not really mutated that much since they became the beings that they are some 6.5 million years ago. And the situation had been, of course, for human beings, that as they moved and mutated through 5 million years ago, that the situation of different families and species subspecies of that particular family gradually mutated out into there being the different Neolithic forms of creature, that of whom had lived in caves, also very similar, not actually to the state of situation that you have evidence, pure evidence at this time, of cave dwellers. There were actually many beings who lived upon the plains and in the jungles of various parts of the world who actually survived way before the situation of human beings actually moving to caves, because that obviously was really just around the period of the Ice Age and that kind of thing. So if you're looking at it chronologically, the situation of human habitation and how they have mutated really has appeared to have mutated much later on in their development. So it was actually that you had five branches of different beings of different sizes who actually, and one of these branches actually mutated over to the Indonesian parts and Malaysia and that kind of thing, where they actually had become much smaller than their other counterparts who actually lived in the northern wastes, such as Canada and the Americas and Russia and the Himalayas. And all of those countries to the north have one kind of Sasquatch and one kind of branches of the five disciplinarians, the five mutations of human habitation. And in exactly the same way that you would find that to the south, very early on, there became a separation with some parts of the life form and tree of life of human habitation and also their other species variants, if you like, of which, of course, Sasquatch is a major contributor. Why is it that Sasquatch are such a major contributor? It's quite simply because they're one of the primary sources of DNA. Now, and as I had said and illuminated last time, that predominantly Sasquatch and human beings have a direct link, and that is actually to do with their hair color, because in the mutation process of human beings, the closest and earliest of the representation nowadays in your modern times is actually from people with ginger hair. And that is one of the earliest forms of genetic which continues to reign through and comes up every now and then within the mutation process. I'm not saying that that means to say that person is more cerebrally that way or whatever, or that they are in some way mutated wrongly. I'm just merely saying that it's part of the genetic throwback of that specific species. Now, with Sasquatch, it is, of course, that many of the depictions of them have been a very large creature, that kind of thing, very imposing. And in actual fact, it has always been that a part of humanity's early interpretation of themselves and their mutation has actually been that in the very infant parts of time, that beings in that early era were actually able to blend with their surroundings and also to change their vibration in order that they could illuminate and elude various predators of the time. Now, I understand, of course, that you could quite easily see that within certain groups of being, perhaps to do with the plains and that kind of thing, when they were trying to take down a woolly mammoth or being actually cornered by a specific kind of other animal, a tiger or whatever, that inevitably and variably there would be different situations where human beings would become entrapped and actually simply not be able to escape such a situation, in as much as they began to forget and lose control of the animate mind and the way in which these possibilities were available to the human form and to do with the species that became Homo sapiens. Of course, this trait also illuminated through the different distillation between humanity or that form of species and other beings from elsewhere within the universe. And this also tends to bring about a certain aspect of the mutation process that you see, which is why it is there's such a great variance at this present time with so many different beings, many different cultures and tribal situations, as we had illuminated last time, were also a varying factor of how the genetic expression is brought about, and also, of course, depending upon the specific climate and control environment, which also has a bearing fact upon the mutation process of one being from another. Now, if you look at it from the aspect of species, you would see, for example, if you look at a whole species, shall we say, like gorilla or orangutan, you would see, apart from the fact that orangutans are predominantly ginger in red hair color, that for some of them, they will have different facial expressions and different facial mutations, which actually helps to tell them one from another. However, the mutation process is not as severe as it tends to be within human beings. And within human beings as well, you have the assumption that human beings, for example, will tend to mutate oftentimes in such a way during even the physical life. And that, of course, is how you have situations of cancer which can arise. This generally tends to be something which is only passed on to other species via human beings that doesn't actually happen that often within the species itself. Now, I admit that many different forms of dog and cat also suffer from different varying cases of a kind of cancer, a cancerous growth and that kind of thing, but these generally tend to be the mutations of cell structure and how these continue to move on unabated, usually due to environmental pressures or certain specifics of stress and distress to do with the harbors of mineralization, which may be predominant in a specific area or genome genetic that happens to be present within that certain family group at that time due to the mutation process allowing a certain form of weakness and that kind of thing. I have to say that we have seen no evidence whatsoever that Sasquatch themselves tend to suffer from cancer or cancerous growths at all in any way. So this being the case, unless they actually come into a closer proximity with an abundance of electromagnetic or static charges. And also, it appears to be that they actually may come into closer contact with such facilities as in the mechanization and magnitude of electromagnetic forces. So that's usually to do with power stations and the ensuing state of affairs that surrounds that kind of situation.
Okay, so, all right. Now, we also discovered last week that they can shapeshift.
Yes.
And that they can become invisible at will, which is why we haven't found them, basically. And that they can only show themselves to whoever they want to show themselves to, purposefully. And that they know where we are within 30 miles of
30
them.
Miles,
they know when a human being is near.
Yes.
They are telepathic.
Yes, quite so. And it does mean as well, also, of course, that many of the pictures and photographs, pieces of film and that kind of thing, that human beings have actually picked of them generally tend to be fraudulent.
Yes, well, it sounds like it. And we'll go into exactly what they look like, actually. I think that would be very interesting. I'd just like to just cover again last week when you told us that they don't actually generally eat meat unless they're vegetarians, basically, but they don't generally eat meat unless they are really hungry and they come across something that's already dead in their path. Then they will not eat all of it. And that they're loners, really, aren't they, as well? They don't mate for life.
That's very true.
That's the other thing that you told us last week. So,
yes.
And basically, they're very spiritual creatures because they're in tune with their own spirit.
Yes, absolutely so. Or naturally, they are in tune with their own spirit because that is how they're able to change and alter their vibration at will and move it from the vibration of the earth dynamic. The point is that you must understand as a human being, as a conscious human being, that you can actually change the level of your vibration, and that is a part of course, not just of how you have an out-of-body experience, but I'm talking about actually enabling you as a physical being to alter your vibration to such an extent that you actually change and alter the very vibration of your individual cell structure, which then enables you to fade from view. Now, of course, I understand that this certain kind of situation was actually illuminated in a work, in a piece of literature quite recently. And this it actually came about in the shape of a story. Now, the situation I'm talking about, of course, is within the prophecy work, and that actually, however, what happens is that when a human being becomes more loving and changes their vibration, they begin to become more illuminate. This means this change of vibration illuminates the physical state, the actual cell structure. And if you continue with that process unabated, you come to the point of not just pure bliss and happiness for the individual, but you also come to the point of being able to move your physical state in and out of the physical presence of which you are a part.
Okay, and this is how they do that.
And this is exactly how they do that. It's not, however, something that they have to learn to do, but rather something which is a part of their makeup, their intrinsic makeup, because as beings in the spirit world, they are much the same, and they don't actually, so their life isn't something of a progression whereby they have to learn a whole sequence of events or whatever during their physical life in order to become this way inclined. They are naturally that way.
Do they have a language? With how they, I mean, you know, they don't always communicate telepathically, presumably. Do they have a language between them?
Yes, they do have a language, but it generally tends to be, however, that most of their communication is telepathic. And yes, that means that they have a structure of language within that as well. And it's called actually Sanquani.
Sanquani?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
The language of Sasquatch is Sanquani.
How interesting. And do they sing or howl or other sort of interesting little traits about them that we find
yes.
fascinating?
Well, actually, they tend to whistle. Sanquani is generally accompanied by whistles. It's a form of structured language as well, but that it appears to be accompanied by these different calls. And also there are knocks and clucks and top and taps as well. So different parts and areas of Sanquani depend upon the proximity between different Sasquatch and how well they are knowledgeable of one another's presence. So it may well be, for example, that you have two different Sasquatch talking at two different ends of a valley, and there may be 20 miles between them. They can actually communicate both telepathically and also in Sanquani by using different forms and facts of using the tapping of trees and that kind of thing in order actually to carry sound. They will do this usually either in the depth of a valley or even on the outside of it, at the top of it. It doesn't actually mean that they have to be in any one specific proximity to one another, because they will actually pick up their intonation from one another telepathically anyway, and within the conscious thought processes that they have.
Really interesting. If you'd like to join us with a question relating to our subject tonight of the Sasquatch, the plight of the Bigfoot, Then the phone lines are open and we'd love to hear from you. The number is toll-free in the US. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free, but the number is 001-530-876-3222. And you're listening to Spirit's Work. Wow, this is amazing. So, do they always walk upright?
Yes, in the main they do, although I understand they climb as well, and they're very good climbers. They will use this as a point of outlook. They will use this as a point also when they sleep, although they don't always sleep up high. They may often sleep at the base of a tree or something like that.
So do they have predators?
Not generally, no. Apart from human beings, which they're always aware of, as I say. Although I understand, because of increasing deforestation, this is a situation which is becoming more and more tenuous. And of course, Sasquatch are not just confined to forest. They also live in tundra situations as well, where they generally tend, if it is that kind of situation, they generally tend to actually grow extra fur, extra hair.
So it would,
particularly would that, on their faces.
So would that be what we could call the Yeti?
Or
is that a different sort of thing?
Well, actually, it's a different element of the Sasquatch beings. But, however, it can most certainly be that they're not as hairy as they are depicted either. It's rather a gross exaggeration of the situation.
Well, this is it. I would love to know that. That was going to be my question. What do they look like?
Well, it very much depends, as I say, on where they predominantly live, remembering that they have these chameleon-like abilities. That means that they can shift to their specific surroundings. So it will be that you, as a human being, may actually walk straight past one. And you may be just within several yards of a Sasquatch and not actually know. So clever are they at being able to move and dilate and change and alter their actual living tissue structure. It's in exactly the same way as you observe different beings. Cuttlefish, for example, chameleons themselves. There are many different forms of chameleon who live in the physical form. It just means that some are more adept at changing their shape or morphizing their cellular structure to enable them to blend into their surroundings. Sasquatch are no different in this respect, although they, I understand that people feel and sense them as being beings with very large skeletal structures and that kind of thing. Actually, their bones themselves are quite thin. And this is something worth remembering, because it does mean to say that even those who are quite bulky in appearance will actually be able to change their shape and alter their skin patination as well at times, in order to blend in with their surrounding state. So that doesn't mean to say, of course, that a Sasquatch will just become a pile of leaves, but what they will do is they will actually cover themselves so that you won't actually know that they're there.
Wow, I just love this. I love this. Okay. What about their faces, the shape of their faces?
All of them are individual. They have not gone the route of natural progression of how many species have, in that, for example, you have certain forms of dog, perhaps, if they are within a given breed, that they all look the same. In exactly the same, you would have the mass of seagulls and of one specific variety or of a determined species, you would have that it has a certain shape or coloration, and every single male or female gull of that specific orientation look exactly the same, because they are absolute carbon copies of one another, almost as though you had made a genetic marker and stuck with it, and that it had become frozen in time and never gone beyond that aspect. Within Sasquatch beings, you will actually have the situation would change dramatically from one being to another, but it also is illuminate depending upon their specific spirit as well, as their spirit tends to have an illumination upon the species. Now, you may also, of course, see this as being evident within certain structures of other human beings, of perhaps certain people who have a certain genetic strain, perhaps Malaysian, or perhaps Indonesian, or something like that, or Indian, both forms, either whether they come from North American native peoples or any other native peoples. You will define that they are illuminated by their spirit to a certain extent, and their beauty as well as a physical being will be translucent because of their spirit energy and contact. It's not an inert state. It's actually something which can very often illuminate the physical presence. Now, in exactly the same way, my dear friend, that you would find within a human being present, that gradually, perhaps through the period of years of its physical existence and its continual presence and acknowledgement, perhaps, of its spirit, you will find a translucence which will appear within the cell structure, so that that person becomes actually quite illuminate, particularly if they're very happy or very energized by their life condition and their knowledge, their duality, if you will, with their spirit. With Sasquatch, this is something which is amplified again and again, and doesn't only come out through their language, but also comes out through their skin, and their whole presence is something of a radiance, really. They're not gloomy beings by any means.
Yes, we always think of it like that, don't we? Furtive and menacing looking, really.
Well, and also frightened, perhaps, to a certain extent. And I have to say that perhaps one of the situations which is most difficult for Sasquatch in the main is to actually be able to overcome the presence of the predatory state of humanity that they are finding themselves in. And that, I suppose, more than anything, is something which is beginning to drive them into, not bitter rivalries, but is actually driving them into less and less of them wanting to have a physical existence. Because the jewel of their life had previously been predominantly the love of being able to have and share the existence with the planet of Earth. After all, their spirit is something which blends very well with the spirit of the Earth. Not so with human destiny, which tends to be more rigid and impacted upon religious circumstance and fear. And that then means to say it actually negates the spirituality of the being itself. And as we see, when we're looking at different species, even though we ourselves have had physical lives, had an Earth existence, we are also acknowledging the point that when coming from a different period or a different instance of that human existence, we often find that spirits themselves will tend to migrate and only stay within that one specific time period or existence, quite simply because they actually are afraid of or still have some forms of fear over how human beings have mutated and how they have turned into this more aggregate, abhorrent being. And that's exactly why it has become that Sasquatch, in many respects, have actually, in almost in to a point, resigned themselves to the failure of their species.
So you've said that they're not dangerous to human beings, and
no.
That because they can become invisible and shapeshift as well, they are not likely to be caught. Could they be caught if one was ill or something like that? Could it be, allow itself to be caught?
Well, they do not usually succumb to that kind of situation. I know this is most unusual. You would think, well, all beings become ill.
Mm.
But the point is they don't actually have diseases. And what generally tends to happen, however, is if there is a situation where a Sasquatch is aware of their impending passing, as I had said before, others will come and join with them because someone has to bury it.
Has to
deal with the remains of a Sasquatch so that they would never be found.
And you've said that it's like a hole that goes straight down into the ground vertically, and that they are buried head first down it, so they're
yes.
upright.
Yes.
Feet up.
Yes.
Okay.
And the only essence then would be that, and I understand that the foot is actually left. It's always at least a whole foot,
okay.
Excuse the pun,
yes.
A whole foot underneath the soil, underneath the top of the soil.
Mm. Absolutely.
I have understood that some forms of Sasquatch in the Indonesian islands and that kind of thing can be found buried sitting.
Sitting?
Yes.
Okay, that's not such a deep hole then, is it?
No, I understand, however, that it's actually because of the terrain that they live upon, the fact that there is much less soil.
Okay.
And that tends to be the reason for this.
Is there, and what about the mourning of this creature, or are they aware of the spirit of the creature still around them, their friend that is still there in the spirit form?
Well, yes. Now, as I had said and illuminated last time in this discussion, I had actually said that their spirit is actually around them, around the female, for example, before they actually mate, before they actually make this a physical possibility.
Oh, yes, I forgot about that, sorry.
And so, no, please, it's quite all right. I forget nothing, friend. So the situation then became that the whole premise of the way in which they interact will be that you have perhaps a family of Sasquatch who are only a family for but a short time. The situation, however, will be that the spirit of that offspring will be very close at hand. Also, too, that they walk with their ancestors. This is something which some strands of humanity manage to keep all the way through their tribal heritage. And their tribal heritage became something which actually they tended then to be pinned upon. I'm not saying that Sasquatch are that way. They don't glory in past names or even have a type of history that they speak about, because their existence is one of pure empathy with the earth plane and with that dynamic. So it's something which is quite different. However, so they don't laud one another's ancestry and type and form, not in the way that other ancestry of physical human beings and their mutations tend to do. They will perhaps do this in scrolled writing or in the way in which they are schooled, the way in which they are taught to do with various aspects of prowess or spiritual identity and nature. This is something which Sasquatch do not have to contend with, quite simply because they are aware already of their identity, and that's something that doesn't bear them aloft of this, but that because of the fact that they are so harmonic with the rest of the planet, that they actually tend to not have this as a precipice for disaster for them to fall into. If you look into the aspects and stretches of humanity and how they move from one part of their paradigm of life, if you like, you would see that they are actually always tending to depend upon histrionics, the states of the stoic fact, or the way in which they actually acted, or the decision-making process that was gained at that time, is something that generally tends to be then something which holds the tribe back, rather than allowing it to move forward with fluidity, so that the tribe is able to understand their whole environment and how they have to perform in order to be harmonic within it. That's part of the process of why human beings in the first instance became unglued to their environment and then began to take more and possess more than they actually ever needed to. It's something which actually moved away from tribal behavior, and that's not to say that all tribal behavior either was something of a beauty, clearly not. The many situations to do with the Egyptians, the Romans, whoever it was, they weren't just a beautiful, wonderful cultures. They were barbaric people as well, people who created great catastrophe amongst their kind and treated a great dysfunctional, unspiritual state about their the way that they treated one another. And this, too, is something that, unfortunately, many people, even in their spiritual value, will have some mythological attachment brought about to this content of history, whereas actually Sasquatch don't actually have any of that baggage.
Very good. Yeah, absolutely. So, have any of the Sasquatch become extinct?
I understand that there are those who are very close to it, particularly with the islands of Indonesia, Java, Borneo, that kind of place as well, are becoming very strangulated, really, by their decreasing environment and the possibilities that are left to them. I understand also that there are many who actually, first chance that they get, actually move away from their islands, of course, because they are very good swimmers as well.
They're all good swimmers?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes, absolutely so.
Ah, so they climb trees and they can swim.
And they can swim underwater as well.
I love this. Do they build homes?
No.
Okay.
They don't need to.
Do they wash?
Well,
you know, I mean,
they don't knowingly become dirty, friend.
Okay.
But the point is, though, that they, upon meeting one another, don't spruce themselves up either.
Okay, right.
They will actually be what they be, and they're generally tending to. I'm not saying that they actually have a conscious awareness necessarily of the state of their being, of what they look like. It is not something which is important to them.
Would you say they are handsome, the males are handsome and the females are beautiful? Is it that obvious, the difference between them?
I understand beauty is in the eye of the beholder, my friend.
It's very tactful.
Well, one must be when one is in the presence of them.
But they must be quite magnificent, though, really.
Absolutely. Their spirituality is something that really glows. That's the point, that they are so intrinsic with the Earth paradigm. It's really, actually, I suppose, the earliest form of conscious being that actually had a specific journey intention, and that was to continue their spiritual behavior as they had resonated within the spirit
world. Do they ever come across, you know, like, say, primates in some of the places
they
live? And they mix okay, do they?
Apart from with chimpanzee, yes. And some forms of... I'm trying to think of the actual specific species.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
There are some forms of primate who are a little more aggressive than others. And it will be that they will tend to move away from those rather obstreperous beings, quite simply because they're angry, because of their the difficulty of keeping their tribe together.
Mm, and food. Maybe they're threatened by somebody coming and eating their food.
Well, no, not really, because Sasquatch do not have a particular favourite. The point is, they can eat virtually anything.
Mm, but maybe the other creatures don't know that.
And subsist upon it. No, that is true. Yes, they tend to covet their own own larder, as it were.
Okay, well, I've still got loads and loads of questions, but we've only got 5 minutes left, so
yes.
I'm going to try to go for the ones that are going to be answered more easily and
well,
quickly.
I will try to be brief, friend.
Oh, that'd be a first.
Oh, do I talk a lot, friend?
What about their decline? Statistics. How many are there? Do you know? Is that...
That's extremely difficult.
Mm.
Mm. Yes, I understand. For example, I can give you a situation of the North American continent.
Mm-hmm.
If you are looking from the tip of Alaska to Newfoundland, you would see that there are approximately... just 1,500.
Well, that's more than I thought, I have to say.
But it's not many.
But it's not many, no.
Don't forget, friend, that the tipping point of a species is around 200.
Yes.
That doesn't mean to say that this is a situation which, as well, bodes well for them, being that this particular continent is such a large area, and predominantly they tend to be in the northern part of it. I'm not saying that they are not elsewhere. In fact, I understand that there had been a family who had lived in the Everglades for a very long time, and they're very ancient, but they also managed to elude human behavior, and did so because of their great ability to swim.
Okay.
Unnoticed, you see.
So you can't really say how many there are altogether, really, but roughly that's in that area anyway. So presumably it's similar in other areas of the world where
no,
they
not
are.
Specifically. The other part, the other... a place, I suppose, where they exist fairly readily is actually across the frozen wastes of Russia and China.
Ah, okay.
To the north, you see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Really, from the Himalayas to the north is also a place of their greater abundance. I'm not saying that they do not exist to the south of that. A plane of existence, you see.
Absolutely. And then obviously their skills will be determined where they live.
Yes.
To what they become particularly good at.
Absolutely. As I said, they have been known to survive in situations of tundra as well. So that means places without trees, places with just short grass and rolling hills. Or gullies and that kind of situation. They have been known equally in those kinds of environments too. You have some who will actually take shelter in caves, even now. And others who will take shelter in trees. You have some who actually move from one island to another. as they swim. And perhaps, maybe even live much of their life.
And do they, I mean, when they come in contact, we've only got a minute left.
In that
they,
kind of environment.
When they come back, when they come into contact with each other, when they travel about like that, do they all get on well? Do they mix well, or do they have confrontations? Do they ever fight with each
no.
other?
No. There don't. Is no animosity. There is no situation of taking... Don't forget, friend, human beings tend to fight because they are selfish or because they're aggressive because of their own feelings of fragility. Sasquatch do not have feelings of fragility. They are content. They are beings blending with the earth.
Okay, I thought that, you know, when anything becomes scarce, all animals that I can think of will fight over...
I understand that.
You know, over commodities when they get rare, and being that there's so few of them, you know, say, I was just thinking about in the mating season or whatever it is.
Oh, no, my dear friend, no. The attraction in the mating season is something which generally tends to happen, and don't forget that they don't mate every season. I mean, to say that is not something which continues in the same prospect as human beings or other animals.
Okay, well, we'll start off there next week. Absolutely fascinating, Gregory. Thank you very much indeed.
With love and light and peace be upon your journey, friend. God bless.
God bless. And we hope you've enjoyed the show. Our website is www.spirit-teaching.com if you'd like to find out more about us. Book yourself an Akashic reading. And basically, we have another show on Thursday. You can join us there as well. That's 1 p.m. Pacific. So, my name is Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Works. Until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.
StreamGuys. StreamGuys is a leading provider of quality streaming media services. Whether you're an independent broadcaster or a large corporation, StreamGuys is your best choice for managed live or on-demand video or audio streaming, dedicated server products, turnkey subscription services, podcasting, and much, much more. StreamGuys. Affordable, reliable, scalable. Since 2000, StreamGuys has been providing quality streaming media services for the smartest businesses on the internet. StreamGuys.com.
Hi, this is Mark Omay. I'm really happy you're enjoying BBSRadio.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Joe Vitale. I'm one of the stars of the hit movie, The Secret, and I'm the author of Way Too